Hey everyone, it's the Kung Fu Genius, aka Alex Richter. And if you're listening to us on audio only, I'd appreciate you rating and reviewing the podcast wherever you listen to it. And of course, if you like what I do here, don't forget to subscribe to the Kung Fu Genius on YouTube and hit that bell for notifications. Are you a fan of Wing Chun Kung Fu? Well, if you listen to me, I assume you are. I got great news for Kung Fu Genius fans. Right now, you can get an all-access one-month free trial subscription to Wing Chun Illustrated Magazine. Yes, I said free. Go to WCINewsstand.com and register in the upper right-hand corner, fill in your email and password, and use the code KFGTRIAL to get your free trial to the issues from 2011 to the current issue. That's right, all the issues, even the one with this guy on the cover. My Kung Fu Genius column is in all the new issues, as if you need another reason to get this awesome magazine. Go get your free trial subscription today. For all that information, check out the description below. And with that, let's get started.
All right, peeps, on today's episode of The Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be answering all sorts of hot nonsense from YouTube. Lots of gems, lots of the real reason Bruce Lee died, lots of Donnie Yen. You owe the KFG a favor. Let's get to it.
He is unstoppable, unbeatable, unbelievable. He's Alex Richter, the Kung Fu Genius.
And every day, I practice martial arts. What's up?
Word is, I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Practiced all day like a genius.
Yo, Dre, how you doing, man?
Sifu, I'm good. To the ch-ch-ch-ch.
You gut? Were you speaking gut. German there?
Yeah. That's how they say it in Germany. Gutsche.
Oh, is that how they say it in German? Yeah. Please explain to me more about how to say things
I just
in German.
Learned, yeah. The Gucci store is spelled with the little T.
With gut. Gucci. Yeah. All right, like Gucci. Right, got it, yeah, got it, yeah, got it. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Even though it's an Italian word. But anyway, so here we are. Now, this is, I suppose, a monumental episode because this is our 52nd episode. All right. And most people would be like, well, shouldn't 50 be the bigger deal? Well, no, we record an episode a week. So 52 means 1 year of the Kung Fu Genius podcast. I didn't think we would make it past two episodes. I thought they were going to cancel us because the ratings were so poor in the early days, right? But the network, they stuck with us. They let us stay on the YouTubes. And here we are a year later,
they had
right?
Some sympathy for us.
Yeah. And it's been a crazy year, you know? I think it's like, do you ever watch like a famous sitcom that's like really good or really well loved? Let's say like Seinfeld. Mm. You ever watch like the first season of that?
They're still working out the kinks.
It's not the same. Like also like the first seasons of The Simpsons and stuff like that, right? And they're still good, but like there's like a little bit of spit shine that happens over time. Like, for example, how we do the intro.
Yeah.
You know, like I think in the first few episodes, they were different every single time. We wrote something when you did the intro until we finally settled on the whole, all right, peeps, on today's episode of The Kung Fu Genius, insert what the hell the episode's about.
Right.
Lots of gems. And then when the last two things are like specific to the episode, let's get to it, right?
Yes.
So now it's like a formula, right? We are like, it's all old hat to us, right? And then the outro and everything like that. And you know, some of our weird questions from Dryson and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, but Dryson came in like middle season.
Dryson came in. So I posed something to Instagram followers at the Kung Fu Genius and be like, you know, would you guys want us to do a Best of Dryson episode?
Wow. Did they say
and,
yes
no?
Or
they all
no?
said hell no.
And, I would love to
no,
see a
they
Best
were like,
of
that's
Dryson.
The worst idea ever. They were like, they would unsubscribe and they would move and switch countries.
Wow.
Yeah, no, they absolutely hated it.
Dryson is a bit of an oxymoron, really, isn't it?
Oxymoron is the correct way to describe Dryson. So,
you know,
but no,
what's
no, all,
interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The shout out to my man Mikey Dean. The background from the beginning to now was
that's
it
right
was a build too. It was
yeah, that's
cool
right. If you look
see.
At the first few episodes,
yeah,
we didn't have all the soundproofing material.
Yeah.
It was still the walls. We didn't have like the curtains. The only thing we had, I think, we always had these mics and this because that was like the first thing, the first big purchase.
Mm-hmm.
And now a year later, we've almost paid off these microphones and headphones. The Kung Fu Genius is not the highest earning podcast mm-hmm. in the history of podcasts. We have just barely paid off this coffee that we drink. So we are slowly on their way there. But it's been a year. So, you know, the format like evolved over time. The first few episodes, I'm like, okay, we have to have a topic every episode. And then, which I have no problem, I can blather on about a topic. As you know, you've been around me forever. Like, I can blather on about Danchi for 2 hours and try to make it sound interesting. But what we realized is so many people had questions in the comments that it was actually just better to address like what the questions that people are asking us. And that kind of created the Ask Me Anything format, which at first I thought we would just do it every now and again. And now it's like, the Kung Fu Genius is basically Ask Me Anything, and then every now and again we'll do New York stories, or we'll do you know, whatever, like Hong Kong stories, or like ninja episode, like, or something like
candy
that, right?
In there.
Oddly enough, I would never have thought when we started the podcast a year ago that the number one video on my channel would be the Bruce Lee drug letters.
We did not see that coming at all.
Absolutely at not. All.
It's like the scandal that happens in the middle of the season with one of the actors.
Yeah, I thought.
And it pushes the ratings up.
It pushes the ratings up, right? I thought the scandal would happen with you,
Of course.
I thought they were going to find you in the hotel room.
I thought it was
going to
happen with me, too.
Yeah, with a bunch of circus animals or something like that. Yeah, it could still happen. It's still early, right? So anyway, it's been great. The support we've gotten from the fans is like incredible. Yeah. Obviously, I have a Patreon for the Kung Fu Genius, and we have, I think at the time of this recording, maybe 26, 27 Patreons on there who all helped to support the podcast.
This morning when I checked, it was 4,990-something subscribers.
No kidding. So we're almost broke 5,000, right?
Almost there.
So we're recording this episode about a week and a half, and it would be 2 weeks in advance, all right? So by the time this episode comes out, we're going to have 4,999 subscribers. We still would not have broken 5,000, right? So let's curb our expectations a little
bit.
That's
the funny part about that. Yes, it's going to be like... Looking at the numbers, almost.
And then you're going to see a couple people unsubscribe because they're just like, man, those Dryson questions. They're like, no, forget it. Can't do that anymore, right?
Can't do any more of these.
Yeah, so really crazy that people like the podcast. Obviously, as we discussed in the last couple episodes, like looking at what episodes are doing really well, it seems the Bruce Lee content basically kills on the Kung Fu Genius.
And the
occasional Yip Man stuff is also pretty big. And then anytime we take aim at someone, which we really only did once. Like, I don't really want to have a YouTube channel where I'm just talking shit about everyone else. But, you know, I mean, to be fair, Beardy's not a real person.
He's a jackal
who's pretending to be someone named Bernard McAllister, right? So I don't feel bad about taking aim at him because he's like a fake dude with a fake channel, right? So that's totally fine. I think that we need to do a regular segment on the Kung Fu Genius. Maybe not in like these full length podcast episodes, but maybe like every week or every time a Birdie comes out with an episode or a video or whatever, we do, you know, Beardy's Bruce Lee bullshit. And then we just debunk whatever thing that he no doubt makes up in his current video.
Right.
Because that will be a steady stream of content for us from now until the end of time. So super excited. So I just want to say thank you to all those out there who supported the podcast for the first year. Next week is going to be the first episode technically of year two. So we don't really have seasons in the podcast.
Wow.
But I will create a second playlist for like there'll be year one and year two. So it'll be easy for people to kind of see those things. And someone's pulling a Dryson in the background. In the background there. I heard someone opening a bag of chips. And believe it or not, it wasn't Dre. It was our effing sound guy. So anyway, and I also want to thank you guys because look, if it wasn't for you, I would be talking to a wall for an hour and 15 minutes every episode, which I don't think would be nearly as interesting. So, you know, thank you so much for stepping up. And I know,
thank you.
A serious note, all right, like all jokes aside, I know that when I first asked you to do it last year, you were kind of nervous because
Fill some big shoes.
You fill some big shoes because obviously my previous podcast, Dudes of Kung Fu, I did with Big Sean Madigan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, last month we passed the 1 year anniversary of his untimely passing. And, you know, so I didn't want to really carry on Dudes of Kung Fu without Big Sean because I think it would be, it wouldn't be the same podcast because Dudes of Kung Fu was Big Sean and I, and without Big Sean there, I don't think Dudes of Kung Fu could continue in that same way. And I know that whoever I would have picked, because I probably would have picked a Jeet Kune Do person, because he was like, I was the Wing Chun guy, he's the Jeet Kune Do guy. As I always like to say, I used to say to Big Sean, I'm the Wing Chun guy, he's the Jeet Kune Do guy, I smell a sitcom, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like the Odd Couple kind of thing, right? Although oddly enough, because Big Sean also practiced Muay Thai Wing Chun, we ended up speaking, I think, more about Wing Chun half the time than he ended up speaking about JKD stuff.
How long did he do it more?
Well, he did it for a number of years.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did many
before
Wing...
Before Jeet Kune Do?
No. He did Jeet Kune Do first, but I think a lot of Jeet Kune Do people, knowing that Wing Chun was Bruce Lee's core art, oftentimes they'll want to go back and do Wing Chun to kind of learn more about the core art. I mean, a lot of them still continue to mm-hmm. do Jeet Kune Do, but then they'll also enhance their studies of Wing Chun, which Big Sean did. He was still a Jeet Kune Do instructor, but he also was quite fond of Wing Chun. And so as a result, it was actually quite easy to talk to him about Wing Chun stuff mm-hmm. Because he wasn't solely coming from the Jeet Kune Do perspective. So I most likely, if I was going to carry on the Dudes of Kung Fu podcast, I would have done it with another Jeet Kune Do instructor. Mm. But I think it still wouldn't have been the same. I would have picked someone really good. Mm. You know what I mean? Someone that, you know, I feel would obviously be someone that I could have really great conversations with. But I think that person would have been unfairly compared to Big Sean, right, even though that person would probably be great. And honestly, there was a real short list of people on there, you know, to do that podcast
if you would have got Bruce Lee himself, it probably would have been.
It would have been different because Bruce Lee didn't have that Brooklyn accent that Big Sean had. Right. Bruce Lee didn't bust my...
Sean Madigan.
Yeah, he wouldn't have bust my balls from my hair all the time, right? You know, like, so it would have been different, right? So I think the best way to honor Big Sean's legacy is to keep that podcast, to finish it, mm-hmm. so people can always go back and listen to those. And, you know, every now and again, I might go on the Dudes of Kung Fu Facebook page and do a live one or whatever. And I do plan, and I told the Dudes of Kung Fu fans that I actually want to write a book about Dudes of Kung Fu and kind of make it have all the seasons of Dudes of Kung Fu there and write a little something about each of the episodes, background story.
You did about 4 or 5 seasons.
Yeah, we did about 4 or 5 seasons. That's and dope. I actually started writing it, and I told people last year I was going to do it, but obviously with all the projects and everything I've been working on, I haven't been able to. I still plan on doing it.
Yeah.
And writing about Sean and also maybe having some people contribute to the book who knew Sean as well. But one, time has been an issue because my Wooden Dummy book took up most of last year.
It's a thick book.
And also Big Sean wrote the foreword for the Wooden Dummy book, which was really bittersweet because Sean, I asked him a long time ago, I said, hey, would you like to write the foreword for one of my books? And he was like, great, yeah, let me know which one. And then when I decided to do the Wooden Dummy book, I said, you want to write the foreword for the Wooden Dummy book? And he was like, wow. He was like, oh, the Wooden Dummy book, the Wooden Dummy's very advanced. He was like a little nervous about it, but he's like, but I will totally do it. And then, so I mentioned it to him a while ago and before I started editing the book. And then in September of 2020, I was like, all right, Sean, I'm doing the book now. So, you know, if you would write the foreword, that would be great. And he sent it to me in a week. Mm. He sent it off really fast. He did it, and it was beautiful. And then that was September of 2020, and then in December he passed. Wow. Right, so it would be, I think, the last thing he kind of wrote on martial arts that would be out there.
Wow.
And then of course I put that in the book, and you know, Big Sean passes, and now it's like a dedication to Big Sean, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where it was just supposed to be the foreword for my book. And so that made it super hard to finish the book. As I mentioned a couple weeks ago, Sifu Elman Leung, who was one of my CBOX, I talk about him in the book all the time. He passed away in 2020. I had to change all the references to him in past tense in the book because he came up over and over again because he was a huge influence in the Wooden Dummy, in particular with how I do the plum flower step. And then Big Sean writes the foreword, and then Big Sean passes. And I was like, oh, man, it was really tough.
Tough because, to get through that.
Because, yeah. you know, I would edit the book, and every time I would open the file, Big Sean is in the beginning because yeah. the photo I would pass by his face. Like, every time I opened it, it was really difficult. Because, you know, it's not like I ever forget him. I mean, I think about Big Sean every day. But there he was in my book, front and center, every time I have to open it, as if, even from the grave, Big Sean is still trying to be a pain in my ass, right? He's still, like, in my face all the time, right? And so one of the things I did was I spent a little bit more time with the Wooden Dummy book. Mm-hmm. I could have finished it, let's say, about summertime, but podcast, I was editing at that time, took a long time to do it. But I wanted to do it really good because now the Wooden Dummy book, which is now, it just came in, it's thick, such a thick book. It's like, wow. My daughter was like, Daddy, it looks like a novel.
That's cool.
But also because Big Sean wrote the foreword to it. And I love Big Sean to death. Mm-hmm. And Siva Elman Leung is featured in it prominently. I wanted to make sure this was like the best book I had ever written. So I took extra time to really design it well and to double check it and everything like that. And I hope the people who get the book will agree. Like, I hope they think this is not just because it's Wooden Dummy or not yeah. just because I say so, or it's my new book, buy my new book. But I really think it's the best book I've written because I get better as a writer every time. I wasn't a very good writer. Some people argue I'm still not a good writer, but I'm better than I was.
Yeah.
And that's also one of the reasons why I write for Wing Chun Illustrated Magazine, because I just want more practice writing. Like in Kung Fu, you're not good at something, you practice it. I was an okay writer, but there were some things about my writing style I wasn't too crazy about. And I think I've gotten a little bit better. But of course, now I have a British proofreader. Who makes me sound way better than I actually am.
Make you sound British.
So make me sound British. Always changing the spellings of things to the British spelling. It's like, you know, I have to fix those things, right?
Yeah, you have to edit your own edits.
Yeah, there is no U in color, all right? So
he puts anyway, a U in the color.
Of course. Favor, there's no U in favor. Yeah.
Neighborhood.
No way.
Yes.
So anyway, I hope
question.
That, yes.
Mm-hmm. How did you meet Sean Madigan?
So Big Sean and I knew who Big Sean was kind of through the internet, because in the very early days of the internet, he had the first big Wing Chun Jeet Kune Do or Jeet Kune Do forum mm-hmm. online. There was like the big JKD forum.
It was back in the 80s?
Back in the 80s. Before social media, you talked about stuff on online forums.
Yeah.
And he kind of ran like one of the first big ones. So I knew his name. I had seen his name floating around. Mm-hmm. And then we hooked up on Facebook. And he had seen my Howcast series. And he sent me a message like, I really love your Howcast series. Mm. You know, like in step-by-step detail. And I was like, oh, great. Like, that was cool. And then we started talking. And then eventually I went over to Staten Island to meet him. We went to a Chinese food. We went to a Chinese restaurant because his Sifu Steve Golden, who is Bruce Lee's student, was there. So, like, I simultaneously met both Big Sean. No.
Wow.
That's actually not true. I had met Big Sean before that, and like the second time that I met Steve Golden, so we met there, and then we clicked, and his son John Madigan, who was the producer of Dudes of Kung Fu, was getting into podcasting, and his son was like, you know, Dad, you'd be great on a podcast, because let's face it, Big Sean is awesome for a podcast. You know, he had that Brooklyn accent, he was funny, he was irreverent. Big Sean was perfect for a podcast. And then, you know, Sean was like, well, yeah, I wouldn't want to do it by myself. And he had the idea to do it with me. And Big Sean asked me to do Dudes of Kung Fu. Wow. And then we went over to his house and we recorded the first episode of Dudes on like these simple mics in his kitchen. All right. and then we just did a pilot episode. It was like 2016, I think.
Yeah.
And we just recorded it in his kitchen, and the pilot episode, so that you can get accepted into iTunes or the Apple podcast. It just has to be 15 minutes in length, and you have to not talk about, you know, blowing up the world with nuclear bombs or something like that. And then they'll approve it.
This topic must be avoided.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Wow.
And then we did it, and then we started to record them weekly or whatever. And then so that was one of the highlights, but we usually recorded them on Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of at the end of the week, we didn't do it every Friday because sometimes Sean was tired after work or I had some stuff going on. But we tried to record it as much as possible. And it's not like this podcast where like we come out every week religiously. The Dudes of Kung Fu is mostly every week. Sometimes it wouldn't be one for a while. The fans would go ape shit when we didn't have an episode come out. But it was difficult to coordinate sometimes. But we did it. It was one of the highlights of my week just to talk to him. Now, oddly enough, through all the hours of podcasting I did with him, I talked to him through the podcast, which we did usually over FaceTime where we recorded our audios.
Yeah.
I talked to him
through the podcast probably way more than I ever talked to him face to face, because over the years of like every week, 1 hour, it was definitely exceeded the time we spent together. But being that he passed in such an untimely manner, I cherish the fact that I was able to do that, because if we didn't have the podcast, I would have maybe only seen him a handful of times in that time. And I had the chance to, for a few years, like talk to him almost every week.
Yeah.
And so we would talk before the podcast, and then we'd record it. And then when we stopped recording, we would usually talk for another 15 minutes. Sean would sometimes tell a story about someone on the podcast, and he'd be like, oh yeah, and he wouldn't mention the person's name because he didn't want the person to be embarrassed or whatever. And then the podcast would end, and I would go, yo, Sean, who are you talking about? And he goes, ah, so-and-so. And then we would go into it, and then all the gossip would happen like after the podcast, right? So, yeah, that was always beautiful, and I'll always like cherish the time we had that. So when he passed away, I already had plans to do something with the Kung Fu Genius name that I had. And I was also, I told him I actually wanted to have my own podcast where I talked more about Kung Fu movies and Bruce Lee shit, because he was a Jeet Kune Do guy, but he wasn't like into Bruce Lee stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't super into Kung Fu movies, right? And so I wanted to do something where I maybe went more that route and less the martial arts route, like have dudes for the martial arts stuff and have Kung Fu Genius to just talk about nonsense, right? And then, of course, when he passed away, then that changed things, right? And then so that's when I decided to ask you to do it. But obviously, this podcast is a very different format than Dudes of Kung Fu. And so I thank you for sticking around here for a year and being my sidekick.
Well, thank you for asking.
Yeah, and dealing with my hot nonsense, right? And then, of course, Mikey Dean, we got him here. Mikey Dean on audio. Mikey Dean also trains here. Yeah, out of pure luck, because that's what he does. And there he is, always sitting there. Half the time he's asleep while we're talking.
He tries.
So when you guys hear that disembodied voice from the back, I still want to get a mic for him, because the stuff he says is really great. He likes being the disembodied voice in the background, right? and it was funny, because a couple of weeks ago we posted on our YouTube page. They have like a wall where you can post stuff in the community page. And I posted a photo of all of us, because we also had Andrew, who's our editor, who's from Adventure Archives.
Yeah,
Andrew,
a
lot of people don't know, Andrew also has a big YouTube channel
big
on his own.
Big time.
Adventure Archives.
Dude, we were walking somewhere, and some dude, like, they knew each other, and I guess he knew him from his podcast.
Yeah, and we took a photo of all four of us. Right, it was me, the KFG, the TFG, the British guy, and Andrew, the editor, because they were here for the we got to come up with something for him, right?
The BFG.
The BFG, British. The British effing guy, right? And then so we had all four of us here in the studio, because Andrew lives in Ohio, so it's very rare that we're together, but he was here for the winter ITC. And then it was so funny, one of the comments was, oh, your editor is Andrew from Adventure Archives? Yes. So it's like, forget, like, he's already a big deal in his own right. So anyway, so just thanks to everyone for supporting the podcast. And hey, we're here for the last AMA of season one.
Wow.
So let's get to it. What you got for me, man?
The first question today. Food for thought.
Awesome.
He's a regular.
He's a regular, great Instagram channel. Huge following.
Yeah.
On Instagram. Yeah, because he posts about stuff about Kung Fu movies. And he's also on Twitter. And great. He's always has great questions. And he's got a podcast. And I hope, hint, hint, to be on his podcast.
Oh.
Because I also like to talk to Kung Fu movies. I also like to talk Kung Fu movies with people who actually know something about Kung Fu
movies. Not with me. Because I don't know. Jack.
But
no, I'm learning.
Yeah, I know. But you're the guy who's like, oh, what's that one movie where that guy did that thing when he was wearing that one?
You're like, it was Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
That was Pulp Fiction.
What are you talking about? Yeah.
All right. Right. What do we got?
All right. So first up, we got Food for Thought. I know this is against the rules, but I have a question for Dre.
Oh, wow.
Oh. He's breaking all the rules.
Breaking all the rules.
Okay.
And you let it through somehow.
He just fell through the filter.
Yeah, it just fell through, like Dryson's questions.
There's like a little hole in a filter somewhere. It's got to be. Have you ever used Wing Chun in your work as a bouncer?
Yeah, you have, right?
I have.
Yeah, yeah. Is that your answer?
That's That's it. That's it. Many occasions, yes.
Yeah, but I remember one you were talking about, you use the elbow control to move someone
I use elbow control all the time.
Yeah.
To
yeah,
grab take someone, people up the stairs.
Take people up the stairs.
Yeah, I just
especially when they're a bit inebriated.
I've actually done that, taking people downstairs off the DJ booth of the Marquee.
Down yes. the oh, yeah, because they try to get... You're upstairs, and they try to get upstairs to the DJ booth and hang out with the DJ, and you take them down by the elbow.
When I was just actually just hit entered 101 and I didn't know anything, this guy comes up and he wouldn't come out, and I got him just in that bit of the elbow.
Lops out.
And he was just looking at me like, "What? How are you doing this?
What is this sorcery?"
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
I use the elbow control on my kids all the time.
I actually one of my crown achievements was really funny. It was something that you do to us a lot: the hand control.
Uh huh.
You know, when you toss us away and you keep us
like in a yo-yo.
Range. Yeah. I used that shit, and it was so funny because the response from all the other bouncers was like, "Yo, dude, thank you. Like, what'd you do?"
I like your imitation of your coworkers. I'm sure they'll be fond of seeing
mainly
this.
Mainly one particular dude. Uh-huh. I think he's Carlos. I think his name. But. They were battling by the bathroom for a minute. How I know is because I was stationed at the cashier.
Uh-huh.
Somehow they felt I was good to watch the money that comes in.
Yeah, and who thought that was a good idea?
Yeah, right. The boss somehow. And what was crazy was I kept hearing, bathroom, blah, blah, blah,
oh,
bathroom.
You got an earpiece or something?
Yeah, code red, bathroom. The thing is, cashier, you can't leave.
Uh-huh.
But I'm hearing it enough, and I'm like,
I would think code red bathroom is like an unflushed toilet or something like that.
Code red. Yeah, nah.
That's code brown.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, code brown, right? But I'm like, I'll be back to the cashier and whoever was there. I got to go.
Right.
And this is probably a good minute or so that they're going code red. And I get back there and they're just like battling with some scrappy Mike Tyson type of kid, right?
Really?
And they're just going, and he's trying to beat up someone else, mm-hmm. but they're trying to stop him, but he's so wild.
Uh-huh.
Boom, 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 boom. And they're just like trying to, and it's like a good five of them back there with him. And I got a hold of his wrist, uh-huh. and I grab him right there, and I literally back him out the back door. I'm going backwards out, and they're just like, following, and uh-huh. I just dude is like he has to go with his hand.
Right.
I take him up the stairs out the back door, boom, and as soon as I get him to the top of the stairs, I leave back to the uh-huh. front door cashier,
and all the cash was stolen.
I can't, dude, I got back there so quick, and I'm like, and then everyone's like, oh, thank you, all the bouncers, right?
Yeah.
But then Carlos comes, he's like, yo, man, that, yo, what was that? I was like, nah, it's just, you know, little something that I learned, you know, picked up along the way. But he's like, yo, dude, we couldn't get this guy, like, every time we try to grab him, he get out, you know, like, he's so crazy,
right.
You just come out of nowhere, yeah. And take him. I was like, yeah, I teach you some stuff,
yeah,
you know, it's all good.
Dre's got the kung fu grip.
I got kung fu grip, exactly, that's what I use, the kung fu grip on him.
That's awesome.
But that was just one of the many few awesome experiences I got to use Wing Chun, but
awesome.
I used it almost every weekend,
yeah,
pretty much. So
that's awesome.
Yeah,
cool,
it's fun.
Great,
it's fun.
That's great.
All right.
I hope the rest of the questions are for you. I don't have to do anything this episode.
Make the job easy on number 52.
That's it.
All right. So next up, we got Douglas Kump. All right. No relation to anyone with that last name. And hello, Kung Fu Genius. I recently listened to an interview on Wing Chun Discussion and Podcast, and the person being interviewed stated that most of the classic Kung Fu movies were a mixture of Hungar and Wing Chun. I would like to get your response. Thanks.
Well, I think it's hard to say. So the problem is general blanket statements about most or all or whatever are usually easily picked apart, okay? Mm-hmm. Because for every movie that used Hong Kun or Wing Chun as the template, you have ones that didn't, or you have ones that made up the style for the movie, right? So,
like Leung Ting making up styles for movies.
For Five Deadly Venoms and stuff, right? Yeah, or even like, for example, Snake in the Eagle's Shadow, right, with Jackie Chan. Like, that snake style that they invented was essentially invented for that movie, right? Like there's not really, outside of maybe mainland Chinese wushu, like, snake style is not really that kind of thing, like, like done in that way. So, yeah, I mean, if you think about it, obviously most of the movie choreographers would have some kind of martial arts background. In Shaw Studios, one of the main choreographers was the late Lao Galeng. Lao Galeng was the choreographer for Chang Che, or Zhuang Jit in Cantonese, before he before he was able to direct his own films, right? So at first, Lao Sifu was just like the contract choreographer for Chang Che's movie. So Chang Che was the director, and Lao Sifu was the fight coordinator for his films. And eventually, Lao Sifu, you know, got into some conflict with Chang Che, because Chang Che, you know, I mean, who knows exactly what it is, but Chang Che kind of made standard formulaic movies, and I think Lao Sifu wanted to do something new and different and exciting. So I think he felt a little restricted by Chang Che's direction. And so during the filming of, I think, Marco Polo or something like that, Lao Sifu quit. And rather than lose Lao Galeng entirely, Run Run Shaw said, well, we don't want to lose you. Would you like to direct your own movies? So he could direct
it. Sweeten the deal.
He could direct it and be the fight choreographer. And that's what he did. And then, you know, obviously films like 36 Chambers. And then so then Lao Galeng became, within Shaw Brothers, a competing director to his former mentor. Wow. Right? And what was interesting is, like, you know, and obviously, so I failed to mention, Lao Galeng is trained in Hong Kun, right? His father, Lao Cham, was a student of Lam Sai Wing.
Okay.
Like the real Lam Sai Wing, who is the magnificent butcher, Lam Sai Wing, Jiuk Wing, the pork butcher Wing, who was a student of the real Wong Fei Hong, right? And there are many films that have been where they portrayed Lam Sai Wing. So that means that Lao Galeng's Si Gong was Lam Sai Wing, right? So this is sick. This is a very thoroughbred lineage to come from, right? So Lao Sifu was obviously a Hong Kun guy. So his fight choreography would obviously use a lot of that stuff. But Lao Sifu was also very creative. And he didn't always lean purely into Hong Kun for his choreography. He would also just sometimes do things that looked good in that moment that weren't necessarily orthodox of that style. Because, you know, when you're making a film, it's not about portraying a style perfectly. It's about doing something that's entertaining for the audience. And the best fight choreographers know how to kind of toe the line between the authenticity and then just doing stuff that also looks good. But anyway, so Lao Sifu became one of the prominent choreographers for Shaw Studios, and then obviously his main style is Hong Kun, and that tended to feature prominently in his choreography and also in many of the storylines, where he would have his adoptive nephew, Gordon Liu, who he had also taught and trained in Hong Kun, and then he would play a lot of people historically from Hong Kun, right? So you had that, and then on the other side, especially in the late 70s, Sammo Hung, who was a choreographer for Golden Harvest, which was the main competitor to Shaw Brothers, kind of fell in love with Wing Chun around the time when he did Warriors 2 in 77. And so what I've heard, of course, people say stuff you don't know. I mean, maybe it's true, maybe it's not, that Sammo liked the Wing Chun style because it looked very good in close-range fighting. It was fast, it was dynamic. And also Wing Chun had its own patriarch. Like Hong Kun had Wong Fei Hong, Wing Chun had Leung Chan, our you know, Yip Man Si Gong, who was, you know, kind of very famous. So that's why he decided to portray him in movies, do something different, because there were so many Wong Fei Hong movies.
Okay.
And Wong Fei Hong was, like, played again and again by different characters, whether they were the older version in Kwa Tak Heng, or Jackie Chan playing a younger version of him in Drunken Master, or Gordon Liu also playing younger versions of him.
He wanted to add a new flavor.
Yeah, just do something different with different style, different people. So then that then became kind of one of the storylines in the late 70s, that, like, Shaw Brothers was, like, on the Hong Kun tip and Golden Harvest was on the Wing Chun tip. But that's not entirely true. I mean, look, they made Magnificent Butcher. Sammo Hung made Magnificent Butcher, which is about a famous Hongkun practitioner, and very prominently used Hongkun and Hongkun shapes in that film. Mm. So was Sammo using purely using Wing Chun stuff in his choreography? No, all right? And were there also Wing Chun elements in Shaw choreography? Yes, Chang Che hired. So what people don't realize is when Lao Sifu quit being Chang Che's director, all right? He just left. And then Run Run Shaw was like, no, he doesn't want him to go here. Like, stay with us. I'll let you direct your own movies. Chang Che no longer had a fight choreographer. And that's when they hired Leung Ting. Mm. So Leung Ting became Chang Che's fight choreographer. To a certain degree, Leung Ting replaced Lao Sifu as Chang Che's fight choreographer. And that's when they did Sick. Five Venoms, and they also did Invincible Shaolin, or North versus Southern Shaolin. And so on the Shaw Brothers side, which is supposed to be all Hong Kong, you literally had a Wing Chun master, Leung Ting, doing Wing Chun stuff in there. And even in Venoms, even though they made up those Venom styles, you see some Wing Chun stuff in there because Leung Ting was the choreographer, right? You see Bong and some different types of Wing Chun movements and stuff. So I don't know how much of it was mixed. You know, obviously all this stuff is mixed, but like, to have a sweeping statement, like it's not all Wing Chun and Hong Kong. There were also movies about Choy Lei Fut. There were also movies about other martial arts styles as well, Mantis and things like that. So you can't say, oh, it was all Hong Kun and Wing Chun, because that general sweeping statements are almost always wrong. So you go.
Wow. All right. Let's keep it moving forward. Not general sweeping, but forward. Next up, we got Jerry D-Man.
All right.
You spoke of Wing Chun movies. For your next Q&A, would appreciate your take on the Grandmaster and Tony Leung.
Ah, yes. One of the perhaps most famous of all the Yip Men movies that came out, right? Well, we have talked about it briefly, in like little drips and drabs throughout the year in the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Drips and drabs. There's a lot of raining in that movie,
too. There is.
Art.
Okay, so I'm going to do a compliment sandwich. Okay.
Love compliment sandwiches. Compliment
okay.
Sandwich. They're delicious.
Yes. So, first thing, it's a Wong Kar-wai movie. Wong Kar-wai is one of the few Hong Kong art house directors. Mm-hmm. So anything Wong Kar-wai does is going to be beautifully shot. It's going to be artistic. It's going to look good. And you see it if you've seen The Grandmaster. The movie in tone is very different from the Donnie Yen Yip Man movies. I mean, it's very artistic. But that is because it's a Wong Kar-wai film. Okay. And he did mostly non-martial art movies. Like, I think actually The Grandmaster was technically his first martial arts film that he had done. Yes.
No.
Because he normally did dramas. Now, look, he did like Ashes of Time, which had some fighting elements in it, but not much. But I think Grandmaster was his first martial arts movie. That's crazy. Right? Yeah, he's just like In the Mood for Love and Happy Together. And like he's done like dramatic films, and I love Wong Kar-wai's movies.
He wrote those two songs?
Huh?
I'm in the mood for love and so happy together.
There's a little known fact about Wong Kar-wai that actually he's a pop producer.
Yes.
What?
Yes, little known fact.
Little known.
Yes. So my compliment sandwich. Anything Wong Kar-wai does, he spends a lot of time on. It looks beautiful. It's beautifully shot. It's going to look great. The movie's going to look great from the first frame to the end. Okay. The Wing Chun and story sucked. The actors did a great job. Tony Leung is amazing. I would love to have seen Tony Leung play Yip Man instead of Donnie Yen in those movies.
Oh.
Because Donnie Yen is not a very good actor. All right. He's very wooden.
He's an exceptional martial artist.
He's very good at martial arts. And I think they knew Donnie Yen's strength was not in acting. Mm-hmm. So that's why when he portrayed Yip Man, they focused on the martial arts stuff. Because Donnie's not winning any Oscars anytime soon. Okay. I mean, Donnie's very wooden And he...
Hence, you're still, no pun intended.
You're still sore about the fact that he didn't, like...
Yeah, I'm still sore that he owes me a favor, right?
Sore. He's just pissed off he sore. Didn't do this.
Yes, yes. Yeah. We need to bring up this story again. Thanks, Donnie. Happy I waited 3-4 hours for Harvey Weinstein for a signed box.
Yeah. Oh, no.
So, yeah. So, anyway, that does not factor in at all to my salt about Donnie Yen. No, I mean... No, I mean, in reality, he's not a very good actor, but he's a good martial arts actor. He's a good action actor. He's not a good dramatic actor. Mm-hmm. But Tony Leung is not a martial artist, but Tony Leung is a kick-ass actor. I mean, he's one of the best in Hong Kong. And so that's kind of my compliment sandwich. Like, look, Wong Kar-wai's movies are great. I didn't like the story or the action in The Grandmaster, but the performances were really, really solid. So that's how I would say. Now, when people say like, "Oh no, the choreography wasn't bad," okay, the choreography was. It's good. It's a Hong Kong film, but in terms of the story and the way that it was shot and the way that it was done, there were certain things I didn't like about. And also, look, you can't ask me what I think about a Wing Chun movie, all right? Because this is what I do for a living, okay? Mm-hmm. Donnie Yen, for the life of him, cannot keep his effing fingers together when he's holding the Wing Chun Zhong Cao, all right? So people want to go, how's the Wing Chun in the Yip Man movies with Donnie Yen? It's pretty good, but then he stands like this, okay? And then you go, how come the consultant on the film didn't, like, literally just tell him, put your fingers closer together, yeah. All right? You don't have to be like this. You don't have to be like this. But this kind of crumpled stiltskin finger thing, all right? This looks so bad, all right? So, but why do I give a crap about that? I'm a Wing Chun instructor, okay? Now, when I watch a movie about Wong Fei-hung, whatever actor is playing Wong Fei-hung is most likely not a Hong Kun aficionado. So they're most likely getting the shapes wrong. So if I were a Hong Kun instructor, you'd be like, that's not how you hold this tiger position, or that's not how you hold the snake or crane position or whatever. Right. So a Hong Kun guy would look at that and go, this is like not proper Hong Kun at all, right? Meanwhile, I'm going like, I love this Wong Fei-hung movie. It's so great. The way all the casuals who don't really practice Wing Chun go, I love the IP Man movies.
IP.
They're really good. That down the end, he really fast. He really do good, a lot of that. I love them Wing Chun stuff, right? Wing Chun's the style that Bruce Lee did.
Yeah, all right?
And they love that stuff. And I teach Wing Chun for a living. And I've been doing Wing Chun for a very long time. And I go, Yip Man 2. He's on the table. The late Fung Hak-on twists into a twisting stance and is standing in front of him. Donnie Yen is like, in Wing Chun, if someone crosses their feet in front of you, you charge in and knock them over because they're off balance.
Way off.
You kick them, you punch them, you slap them in the face. If someone crosses their legs in front of you.
I can't just stand there, no.
You can't just stand there. And Donnie's like, and I'm going like, this is just dumb. This is not a standoff for a Wing Chun person. This is
table.
A gift for a Wing Chun person. And Donnie Yen is there with his fingers sprawled, staring at him, okay? And so of course, you cannot ask me my opinion on Wing Chun films. Because I don't look at them the way a non-Wing Chun practitioner looks at them. I look at these things very harshly. Mm-hmm. So there were things in the choreography, don't get me wrong. I don't say the fights suck. The fights were good. But there were things from a Wing Chun perspective where I just go, no. Okay? And the whole thing with him and, Zhang Ziyi and the Bagua and stuff like that. And blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Stop. But it was beautifully shot.
Yes.
All right? And that's all I got to say about that movie. Hey, Kung Fu Genius listeners. If you're looking for an easy way to support this podcast, please consider joining the Kung Fu Genius Patreon. You can support for as little as $5 a month and get access to episodes a few days early. Higher levels of support get additional goodies, exclusive content, and even your name in the description. The baller level of support will give you the opportunity to be a Dre for a day and give me a rest from this guy over here. A link for the Kung Fu Genius Patreon page is in the description below. You can also support us by subscribing to the Kung Fu Genius on YouTube, liking this video, and sharing it on your social media platforms. When you subscribe on YouTube, don't forget to hit that bell for notifications so you will know as soon as a new episode or a premiere is available for you to watch. For those of us who listen to us on audio, it's a huge help if you don't just rate the podcast, but also write a review wherever you listen to the Kung Fu Genius, such as Apple or Google Podcasts. I really appreciate it. And now back to me.
All right. Cool. Moving right along, we got Bruce Wayne.
I love Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, yeah. He's really dope.
He's super No, I mean the guy Bruce Wayne on YouTube. He's got fun. He always has funny comments.
Okay,
right. It's always borderline. Like I don't know if he's serious or trolling or both.
Yeah.
Which I like. I like when you're not sure. Then that means the person's doing a good job.
Well, this one you might be sure.
Okay, I'll be sure. Sorry, that was a deep cut '80s reference. I apologize.
We just
lost half of our audience there.
They're like, huh?
Yeah.
Googling.
Yeah.
All right. Is working the long pole good for sticky hands?
Didn't we answer this question before?
I don't know. I don't.
Okay.
Think so.
I don't. I could be wrong.
Something along the lines.
I'm under the vague assumption we might have actually handled this already. But does working the long pole improve sticky hands?
Is it good for sticky hands?
Is it good for sticky hands? That question is obscene, and I'm not going to answer that.
Oh, God. Sorry, Bruce Wayne. Forgive us. Well, we forgive you. Might have been a troll.
It sounds like a troll. Yeah, that sounds like an absolute troll.
All right, so we're going to step and punch forward.
Yeah.
Hotlanta 35.
Hotlanta.
All jokes aside, what is the opinion on how BL died?
BL?
Yeah.
Brian Lang.
Okay.
Brian Lang?
All jokes aside, why would they assume this is a joke? All right. I take the death of Bruce Lee very seriously, all right? It was obviously ninjas. No, okay. Why did Bruce Lee
ninjas,
really die?
Man.
All right, okay, we're gonna open this gaping wound.
What is the opinion?
Mm-hmm.
Is he asking the general opinion or your opinion?
First of all, I don't have access to anything that anyone else who has an internet connection doesn't have access to. Right?
That's not true.
Shut up. Okay, I might have been lying there. Okay. All right. Okay. So I have a copy of his autopsy report and the analysis of his autopsy report. I have all those pages, right? But I'm not the only one who has that.
I don't have access to that.
A lot of Bruce Lee fans have been able to find that there. So I have not just the autopsy report, but also the quote unquote toxicology report and the kind of the findings of like the overview, the thing that was used in the court. All right. And so the problem is if I tell you what's in there, then there's always going to be a percentage of us go, yeah, well, that's not true. Because conspiratorial minded people, you can put the truth in front of them and they're going to, and their nuke button on everything is, well, this is obviously a cover up. Okay. Well, how do you know that? Because you feel it's a cover up. All right. Okay. Then if everything I show you is a cover up, then what does it matter what I show you?
Mm-hmm.
It literally doesn't matter. And if your pet theory is he died of heat stroke, then you're not going to hear anything else. If your pet theory is it was the cannabis that killed him, you're not going to hear anything else. If your pet theory was that he died from foul play, then you're not going to hear anything else. And the opinion of my opinion on Bruce Lee's death doesn't really effing matter, all right? Because I don't have any access or insight that anyone else that has a modicum of time to look at this stuff on the internet wouldn't also be able to do, all right? So all I can say is with the Bruce Lee drug letters and now that we know that he had pretty regular cocaine use, although when I say that, some of the Bruce Lee fanboys are still really triggered. Literally, Bruce Lee is written in letters asking for more cocaine. No, no, he didn't really use coke. Maybe he was just selling it. No, he wasn't using it. Literally, you can put the letter in front of him. Bob, send me more coke. All right. No, he wasn't using coke. Okay. Like, literally, what do you want? Like, if you have no acceptance of evidence that comes in, oh, the letters are fake. Okay. Well, you could say the letters are, his handwriting's a little bit different.
Well, he probably gave it out as gifts.
No, but people are like, oh, the letters are fake. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, his handwriting is a little bit off. Oh, on the letter where he said he was high, his handwriting is off. All right. Literally, the one where his handwriting is off is the one where he says he's high.
Yeah.
Okay. And people are like, Bruce Lee had beautiful penmanship. Absolutely. Bruce had gorgeous penmanship. You know what else he had? He had sloppy penmanship when he was writing fast.
Mm.
Because I have at home a very large compilation of Bruce Lee's handwritten notes in PDF. And when he would write something formally on his sheet, like normally when he would draw something, he would write everything very beautifully. And when he was writing shorthand, he had sloppy as hell handwriting.
Oh.
He didn't always have the, like that perfect cursive script you see that Bruce Lee has.
Yeah.
No, he also had very non-perfect sloppy shorthand.
Yeah.
All right? And
well, that makes sense.
And the letters that people go, look at how sloppy his shorthand, his writing is here. I can literally pull out notes from previous years that Bruce Lee wrote on Wing Chun, where his where he wrote in English in the exact same sloppy shorthand. And the problem is you show them, no, it's still fake. Okay. And also, Linda wrote some of that stuff too. Some of that is actually Linda's handwriting. And they're like, oh, see, this doesn't look like his handwriting. No, dude, Linda wrote it.
Damn.
And I can show you Linda's letters, and you, like, Linda wrote the back. And guess what? Linda wrote the part where she says, Bruce wants you to. So they're not even like hiding that she wrote it. There's no conspiracy, right? But if people don't want to hear it, they're gonna craft everything, and they will intricately craft all of these things to make the letters fake because they don't like how it feels, or they want to speculate that it can't be real. But when it comes to people trying to craft other things that go against their thing, they could be like, no, it can't be that. It's just this. It's that simple. So people are willing to craft conspiracies when it's suitable for them, but dismiss them outright when it's not. So they don't have a threshold or bar for evidence that they apply equally to all of these things. So literally anything I say about what Bruce Lee died of, first of all, it doesn't matter. I wasn't there.
Mm.
All right. What do I know that no one else knows, right? I've heard a lot of people say shit. What does that mean? I've heard a lot of people say shit. Doesn't mean any of them said the right thing either, right? All I'm going to say is with the autopsy report, there was no trauma on his body. All right?
Okay.
So the idea that he was hit or beaten or whatever, there was no trauma on his body. Okay? And you can contest that, but I would always say, how do you know?
Hmm.
Did you see, you know, people say, oh, there's one photo where you could see Bruce on the autopsy bed. His neck is like that. Yeah, because they're opening him up during the autopsy. That's why his neck is folded like that.
Hmm.
How do you think they go into someone when they do an autopsy? With microscopic cameras in 1973? Nah, bro, they cut you up. So you look like that when you're cut up.
Right.
Okay. And there was no trauma, any of that kind of stuff. His liver and kidneys were clear. So poison doesn't really seem to be there.
Yeah, but you don't know, bro. There's like secret Chinese poisons that don't go through your kidney or liver. They just kill you.
Okay, you know that.
I use those all the time.
Right? And even if that's true, how do you know that that's what happened, right? So right now, what do I really think Bruce Lee died of, all right? Well, the one thing about the toxicology report is it checked for metals and poisons, and cannabis was in there. But I've looked at that thing backwards and forwards. I've looked at that. And look, I'm not. Am I qualified to give an opinion on an autopsy or a toxicology report? Bro, I didn't even go to college, okay? I didn't even go to college, all right? If you're like, well, the Kung Fu Genius said. If you're like, the Kung Fu Genius said this after reviewing Bruce Lee's autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And you take that as some kind of gospel for anything. You are an idiot, okay? You're an idiot. Who cares what a college, I didn't even go to college, all right? Who cares what I have to say about a freaking medical report done 50 years ago, all right? But all I'm going to say is this.
I do, I care.
Yeah, me too.
But all I'm going to say is this, all right? For the life of me, cocaine is not on that toxicology report.
Yo.
And that's all I'm going to say about the autopsy.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
So anyway, so what else can I say, all right? Cerebral edema, all right, can happen from cocaine use. And we know that he was using a lot of cocaine. And we know that around May, June of that year, very shortly before he passed away, he got a very large package and he was done finishing Enter the Dragon. So is it possible that he may have been celebrating and binging a little bit harder and something happened, all right? And there you go. So I, you know, for a while the heat stroke theory was interesting when Matt Polly came out with it. And from that Bruce Lee documentary they did about his death recently, that there would have been some proteins or something in his kidneys had he died of heat stroke. There, because your kidneys would have been having a reaction and he didn't have any of that stuff. His kidneys were essentially clear. So the whole no sweat glands thing or whatever, you actually don't dissipate that much sweat for heat through your armpits. It goes elsewhere. So removing the sweat glands in your armpits might not be advised, but it's not going to make you overheat and die. All right. So I don't know about the heat stroke thing, even though Matt Pauly talked about it here on this podcast in episode 2, and Matt Pauly's a very good friend, but he's also just working. And don't forget, when Matt Pauly wrote that book, that was before the drug letters came out. And even he tweeted out, he was like, oh man, what a nightmare for a biographer that you write this huge biography about someone. And then afterwards, this like wiki leaks level dump comes out of all this information that would have been super beneficial when he had originally written the book. So anyway, my counter would be like, what does it matter what the Kung Fu Genie says about Bruce Lee's death? Literally, what does it matter? What the hell do I know that is not available to anyone else? I don't know anything, all right? Betty might know, all right, because Betty was there. But here's the thing people don't realize. Bruce Lee died in Betty's apartment. It took them a while to get the ambulance over and all that kind of stuff. And then so there are obviously theories about
some hidden
about, you know, Raymond's delaying things because he was having conflict or whatever. I don't think Raymond wanted to have his Bruce Lee was his golden egg. All right. Or golden goose laying the golden egg. I don't think he wanted Bruce Lee dead. But there are other people. Look, and you can disagree with me on that. Fine. OK. Raymond wanted Bruce Lee dead. And Raymond, let's just say that. All right. For the sake of argument. So he slow boated the ambulance coming and stuff like that. So if Raymond is really involved, then it would be like, yeah, he wasn't going out of his way to get the ambulance there quickly. On the other hand, Bruce was already dead by the time Raymond got there. So what the F did it matter how fast the ambulance got there? Bruce was dead already, okay? By the time Raymond got there, by the time the doctor got there, Bruce was dead. So the whole thing about why did they go to Queen Elizabeth there in the middle of Kowloon, very close to where we stayed, instead of to Baptist Hospital, which is literally a stone's throw from there? Because you can't fix dead. Okay?
So she came in and found him dead.
No, no. They were there. Well, she came into the apartment. She was in the apartment and she came, he supposedly he was resting and he took the headache. He had a headache. So he took a pill from her and then he was unresponsive. Okay? So here's the other thing that people don't realize, all right? And this is to be fair to Betty, which is not always easy thing to do because, you know, she gets a lot of heat and also she hasn't always represented herself in the best way, okay? Here's something that might blow people's minds, okay?
Uh-oh.
Bruce Lee died in Betty Ting Pei's apartment. Betty was there. She freaked out, didn't call the ambulance right away, got Raymond Chow over, blah, 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 blah. So, but here's the thing. Betty might not have known why the F he died in her bed. Because Bruce essentially had an identical event like he had on May 10th, which is that he collapsed and he had brain swelling when he was in the dubbing studio. That literally happened again on the day he died. But while he's having that brain swelling, he's in her bedroom sleeping. Okay? That doesn't mean Betty knows why that happens, all right? So, like, to be fair to Betty, because everyone has all these conspiracy theories which always point to her knowing or doing something about it. Here's another one, and I'm not saying this is true either. I'm just saying if you want to think about things openly, all right, you want to be a detective about it, look at it from all sides. Bruce died in Betty's apartment. He had a headache. She gave him a pill. I don't think that pill was really the reason why Bruce Lee had brain swelling, because he had brain swelling a month and a half prior, and there was no meprobamate involved. So why would Bruce have this brain swelling, go to the hospital, and then 10 weeks later, however many weeks later, have the same exact thing, but that time he took a meprobamate, but you go, oh, it's because of the meprobamate. Well, if you're following Occam's razor, and you start convulsing on two separate occasions, we look at what was the same on both occasions, not what was the one thing you did one time. That doesn't make any sense. So it's possible that when Bruce died of his, he had a headache and then he had the brain. I mean, why did he have a headache? Because of brain swelling. You know what people also don't realize and people don't think about it because they don't apply logic? When Bruce complained of a headache and he asked Betty for the pill for the headache and everyone's like, oh, the pill is what killed him. Why was Bruce having a headache? Because he was having brain swelling. So Bruce was already dying when he had the headache.
Damn.
It wasn't, you see, but people always go, he had a headache, he took the pill killed him. No, he was having a headache because his brain was swelling. He was already dying when he took the pill.
Yeah.
So it wasn't necessarily the pill. So you see, like, even if you just look at sequencing, the symptom of the headache was because the cause was the brain swelling, if we're going to go that way. Mm-hmm. So it was like it was like you are having brain swelling right now and you're going to die in half an hour. And I give you an aspirin. That it's the brain. It's down. The brain swelling that's killing you. It's not the aspirin that I gave you that made you die.
Yeah.
So I don't think people even think about that. The headache that he had was the freaking brain swelling already. All right. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that Betty has no freaking clue why he had brain swelling. All right. And I feel it probably had something to do with his cocaine use. But how am I going to be 100% correct though? I don't know that. All right. So next question.
Damn it. Damn. Diggity. Go into this.
There we are with that rich Bruce Lee content every episode. I guarantee you this episode is going to be, why did Bruce Lee die? Right? And then it's going to be me going on for 10 minutes about, I don't know how he died. All right? But this might be it. And this might be it, right?
All right. Sorry, buddy. All right. So, I just noticed my man fell through the filter again. Okay. All right. We got another one from Food for Thought.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
God, I was worried it was a Dreisen question.
Me too. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it fell through the filter. I was like, Dreisen again,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. No. I mean, who knows when he'll show up again?
Yeah, who knows? I can guess. I can take a guess. Who knows? Yeah. Anyway,
I never know these things. But Foo for Thought is asking, hey, Sifu Alex, love the podcast. Due to your Bruce Lee, Yip Man, and Wing Chun knowledge...
I would actually say fetish. All right. Okay. Not knowledge.
Not knowledge, just fetish.
I don't have much knowledge. It's a bit of a fetish, yes.
KFG OnlyFans.
Yes. KFG OnlyFans.
Bruce Lee. Yeah. OnlyFans.
Yeah.
80-year-old Bruce Lee, like, yo, what's up? Welcome
to
my
let's not go into this thought experiment.
No, but he's teaching martial arts.
No, yeah, of course, of course. Yeah,
of course. Right. Of course. OnlyFans are
Ask the question.
Have you ever approached to do a commentary track for a DVD or Blu-ray release? If you could choose to do a commentary track for a movie, for any movie, which movie would you choose?
Wow. Well, obviously I would love to do Prodigal Son and Warriors 2 because those are the gold standard Wing Chun movies. However, Eureka Films just remastered those two films on DVD. They now have a box, but it's like a two disc set where you can get both Warriors 2 and Prodigal Son. And guess who's in the DVD extras of that movie? All right.
What?
This guy.
How?
All right.
What the how?
Yes.
What the how?
So I'm not doing commentary.
Okay.
All right. Because the commentary right now, the only person doing commentaries for most of those movies is a guy named Mike Leader. Mm. Who's kind of a bully and a prick, and hopefully he stops doing commentaries when people realize what a bully and prick that guy is. Just to give you an idea, he's a casting director in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And especially a lot of Western or non-local actors who want to get gigs in Hong Kong films or whatever, they kind of got to go through him because he's the guy who does a lot of casting, especially for non-Chinese people, right? So when you go on his Instagram...
I got to go through this.
Yeah, you got to go through that guy. But it's hysterical because like all of these like actors and wannabe actors and people who need gigs in Hong Kong, like they all are on his Instagram and Facebook all like totally kissing his ass.
Brown Nose City.
Yeah, because he's like the gatekeeper for all of them, right? And he loves to talk shit about like people who try to solicit him to be in movies and they don't do it. Like, he likes to show how much power he has. Like, look at how this guy tried to get in a movie, like thumbs down. Like he does it and it's like ridiculous. And like, he'll post something and like the comments from all of these people who are just kissing his ass are like hysterical, right? And you have to imagine, you ever see the Addams Family?
Yeah.
The guy looks like Uncle Fester and Lurch like had a baby, right? And this guy is the biggest internet bully, right? So I don't feel bad about bullying him because he's kind of a POS when it comes to this stuff. Actually, yeah. The only reason really don't like this guy is because he bullies my man Rick Myers. And Rick Myers, one of the reasons why I got into Chinese martial arts, and this dude bullies him online. Every time Rick is like in an interview or Rick does something, he talks all this shit about him, right? And I remember a few years ago on Facebook, this Leader guy talked all sorts of shit about Rick Myers, right? Mm-hmm. And then Rick Myers happened to be in Hong Kong, which he doesn't go to Hong Kong that often. It was on Temple Street.
Yeah.
And bumped into Mike Leader, all right? Like 2 weeks after Mike Leader talked, like all this nasty shit about Rick Myers, right? And guess what? Mike Leader was all smiles and photos and cool and all this kind of stuff. And then Rick leaves and he goes back to talking shit online. So he's like that. Like that keyboard warrior guy who, like, you know, he'll talk a bunch of shit, but if he sees the person in public, then then it's all friends and smiles until the guy goes away. The dude is a coward. Wow. Right now, unfortunately, he's doing like all the commentaries for some of these bigger companies or whatever, but his commentaries actually aren't really that good. His partner, he does it with a partner. That guy is way, way better than Mike Lee. I would rather just listen to his bro do those commentaries than listen to Leader. And hopefully they start getting better people to do these commentaries because he's kind of a POS.
Damn.
So anyway, I'm in the extras demonstrating some Wing Chun. Frank Jang came over here and I talk a little bit about Wing Chun and he shoots some stuff. He's a very short stuff, not nothing. It's like a quick little thing.
Yeah.
And commentaries, I'm not like the movie guy. Like, I'm into Hong Kong films. Obviously, I've been doing this stuff for a long time. And I love watching movies, and I've been watching this stuff since I was very, very young. But, like, you know, the guy who can tell you, like, about the art direction of this scene and why this was done this way. Like, I could, if I needed to do a commentary, I could go and spend, like, a couple days researching everything about that movie and what was written. And then I could fake it like I know all that
stuff.
Like,
you were there.
Yeah, like, you know, I would come prepared or whatever. But, like, off the top of my head, like, I'm not the guy who's going to say, oh, this was shot in this year and this director was replaced by this guy because of this and this actor was changed. Like, I could do the research like anyone else.
I think you could
do it
Arnold style.
Arnold's commentaries are great. Did you ever hear those?
Oh, they're amazing.
Yeah.
They're the best.
He's like, he doesn't say much and then you go, this is great.
That's my style.
I remember this.
Yeah,
so
he doesn't
awesome.
Go into the detail of what happened behind the scenes.
He just describes the movie that he made.
Yes. I'll tell you what. If I were to do a commentary on one movie and just one movie, it would be Heroes of the East from Shaw Brothers.
Wow. Let's do it.
You know, Gordon Liu and Yusaki Yasuaki Kurata, like that movie, that was the first kung fu movie I saw outside of Bruce Lee's movies.
Word.
And that was the movie that made me, like, Bruce Lee, like Bruce Lee's films made me fall in love with Bruce Lee. Heroes of the East made me fall in love with kung fu. Because that is because it's the quintessential like kung fu versus Japanese styles movie, and like the it's basically a kung fu porn. Every single scene, well, all the fights, like all the acting in between, is just like a very thinly veiled filler. Disguise to get into the next fight scene, right?
Okay.
And so I find it really really one of the best. It's a little. I think it's a little underrated. I think people don't know as much about that. It's obviously 36 Chambers and like the more famous ones. It's oddly enough one of the few Shaw films at that time doesn't have a death in the film. So it's like really like a martial arts film. It's great. I would love to do the commentary for that movie, but I think they've already re-released those films. I don't think that's happening anytime soon. But also, look, I know my place. I'm a Wing Chun fanatic. I love Bruce Lee. I love kung fu. And of course, being a kung fu movie nerd is kind of part and parcel to being into kung fu as an art. But I actually wouldn't want to do commentaries and stuff because there are people out there like Foo for Thought, like all of these guys who have podcasts, who are way more qualified to do commentaries than I am. I mean, I have a huge interest in it, but I wouldn't want to take a job. Like, if there are people out there, like their thing is doing kung fu movie podcasts or Hong Kong film commentary and stuff like that, those are the people who should be doing commentaries, not the Kung Fu Genius, all right? You put the Kung Fu Genius in an extra where it's like, oh, let me come and tell you about Wing Chun that's shown in this movie, right? But you don't need me for there an hour and a half telling you that this extra back there later went on to become a director. Like, you don't need me for that.
Wow.
There are other people who are better at that stuff than I am.
Well, do the commentary for Ninja 3, The Domination?
Let me tell you.
Okay, so you just obliterated my entire argument with one movie. I could totally do the commentary for Ninja 3 The Domination. But to be fair, I could also do the commentary for Revenge of the Ninja.
Yeah.
Yes!
People out there, if you want to see the KFG do commentary for Ninja 3 The Domination, let
and
us know
Revenge
in the
of the
comments.
Ninjas. No.
And Revenge of
if
the Ninja.
Gonna
let us know.
If they're going to re-release, like on like Blu-ray, 4K, whatever they re-release that stuff on of like Revenge of the
Canon
Ninja.
Canon Films?
Canon Films. if they're going to have like a real, like the box set of the three movies, even Enter the Ninja, I'll do the shit out of Enter the Ninja. All right. I will totally do that.
Okay. But right? What if the Patreon supporters want us to do it?
Well, we could always, I mean, we can always do our own commentary, right? I mean, obviously not on the film itself, but we could do an audio track, which people could watch alongside watching those movies. I've toyed with the idea of doing that stuff, maybe first for Patreon and then maybe for other people as well, where like you and I or just me or whatever would record the commentary for Dragon, the Bruce Lee story, where I would just clown on all the stuff that's fake in there. And then people could listen to the audio alongside watching the movie, right?
No Retreat, No Surrender.
No Retreat, No Surrender. You know what? Maybe not for Hong Kong movies, but maybe like for those canon movies.
Yeah,
all right. For No Retreat, No Surrender.
For those good ones.
Yeah, those Last
gems.
Dragon,
those
like those kind
gems.
Of movies.
Oh,
right? Yeah.
Special gems.
Yeah. We could do
all
that
right.
special
maybe
one.
Maybe we should do
yeah,
that
maybe
for
that's
the Patreons.
Idea. Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right, let's go.
All right, keep it moving, keep it moving. Jeff Jacques or Jacques or Jack, Jack, yo,
Jacques.
Jacked it up. Really, I jacked
again,
it up.
Again, we really need Andrew, whenever.
Oh, it's Jacques.
All right, hold on. Oh my God, it was Jacques.
It's Jacques.
He didn't know it was Jacques.
Yeah, J-A-C-Q-U-E-S. Yo.
Wait,
Jacques.
How did you say? You said Jacques?
Jacques.
I said Jacques.
Jacques. He didn't know it was Jacques.
It's not Jacques. Jacques. It could be Jacques.
Okay, Andrew. Andrew.
This is so good.
Andrew, I know you're busy.
I love this.
I know you
Stop.
Got other stuff going on.
Stop.
Whenever you have a chance, we need, like, special either just for the channel, a 10-minute video of him messing up names. That's all
up
I want.
Names.
One right after the other.
It's going to be longer than 10 minutes.
Butcher.
Yes. Also, we need a Best of Dryson episode. And Dryson made his first appearance in episode 28.
How do you know this?
Huh? Because I put a poll out there. I ask people, I go, hey, guys, does anyone know when Dryson started in the
I've
KFG podcast?
Poll?
Yeah.
What?
And then they were like, episode 20, you know who knew it? Was Topher. Because
Damn.
Topher was the Dre for the day in the episode that Dryson made his first appearance. And that was episode 28. So that was in June or July. Sorry. That was Dryson's first appearance.
Oh, I gotta see.
So from
this.
Episode 28 to now, we're in episode 52.
He's in every episode?
Well, he's not in this episode yet, so we don't know.
Hope springs eternal.
All right, so anyway, ask yeah. So ask me the question posed by Jacques.
Jeff Jacques is asking, have you heard of, met or know, of Chun Hong? He was a police officer in Hong Kong and trained Wing Chun under a few of Yip Man's students, including Luck Yoy and
Luck
Wang.
You. Luck You.
Luck
not
you.
Luck Yoy.
Oh, Luck You.
Yeah.
Luck You.
Luck You.
Luck You.
Luck right. yeah. you. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It makes me think of that Kirby Enthusiasm episode.
All right. So what's the question?
Okay.
Okay.
My bad. Uh-huh. And Wang Sheng Leung.
Yes.
He has a unique take on Wing Chun, which I always assume came from using it on the job.
Right. So questions, do I know him or did I have I known him?
Have you heard of,
yes.
met or know
him? Yeah. So as a matter of fact, I have heard of him.
Okay.
A number of years ago, I, you know, just became kind of obsessed with this late police inspector Tang Sang,
mm-hmm.
who was a student of Grandmaster Yip Man, a private student. He also famously or infamously shot
was,
some secret footage
yeah,
of Yip Man.
He was like his right
people,
hand.
Yeah.
He was like the
yeah,
Nifka of
yeah,
Yip Man.
Although, you know, they had some, there were some issues. Tang Sang and Yip Man had some kind of quarrel in the early 70s and stuff like that. Mm. But for the most part, he was kind of, he was a big supporter of Ip Man in those final days and kind of the financier of the Wing Chun Athletic Association, among other things.
Lit.
Paying for Ip Man's grave and things like that. Because Tang Sang was a police detective, he was also earning bribe money from gangsters at that time.
Kind
of
like
and,
me. Yeah.
And that was pretty normal at that time. And I became fascinated with this kind of pre-ICAC era of Hong Kong detectives who were like kind of living wealthy.
ICAC.
And ICAC, yes.
I like that.
Independent Council Against Corruption.
Yeah.
And that's basically their form of internal affairs. And that wasn't founded until 1974. So basically before that time, the Hong Kong police, and not just the police, but it was also government officials at all levels, corruption was rampant in Hong Kong pretty much until the ICAC. And it wasn't just like the cops taking money from gangsters. It was also like the cops running side businesses with gangsters and being part of, like, you know, heroin shipments would come in and certain detectives were paid to make sure that stuff didn't get inspected on the way in. So to a certain degree, like, some of the cops and the big detectives were not just taking bribe money to look the other way, but they were also, like, actually part of some of these very large schemes, especially with heroin and drugs and all sorts of other things. But there was also graft, which is a British English word, like, for corruption, right? Which I learned these things because obviously they use all the British English terms. At every level, you know, if land developers wanted to develop some land, they needed to get permits, they could bribe officials to get those permits, and it shouldn't really be that way. But even like in public hospitals, if your uncle is in the hospital and not doing too well and you want your uncle to have better food or you want uncle to have better pillows, you paid the nurse. So Hong Kong really before that time. You want your beloved who's in the hospital to have better care. You slip 100 to the nurse. Like, that's kind of how it was done then. And that was problematic for many reasons, right? And there was also like a saying, mo qin mo shui.
Mo qin mo shui.
Yeah, mo qin mo shui, which is which I talked about in a previous podcast.
No retreat, no surrender?
No money, no water. And you know who said that? The fire department. Your house is on fire, and you come in there, and the fire department comes, and they're looking to see who owns it, and they're looking at you to wait for you to grease their palms, and then they will douse the fire, right? So that was, like, kind of Hong Kong in those, like, 50s, 60s, and early 70s, right? So I became fascinated with Tang Sang because Tang Sang was a kind of a, let's just call him a millionaire for Hong Kong standards at that time, owned a couple of homes, was vastly wealthy, always wore nice suits, and also was a huge martial arts fan and private student of Yip Man. And in 1970, he retired in 1969. Mm-hmm. Yip Man dies in 72. ICAC is formed in 74. So he's already retired for about 5 years when the ICAC was formed. But then they started going back after the cops in the past who were corrupt. So by 1976, all right, the ICAC was hunted down Tang Sang. And they had arrested him for a corruption charge, and he paid bail, the equivalent, let's just say, of tens of thousands of dollars. Let's just say 80,000 U.S. now, something ridiculous like that, right? He paid his bail in cash. And he left, and then he had to come back to go to court again, and he was off. He fled to Taiwan, which had no extradition policy with Hong Kong, and he lived the rest of his years in Taiwan. So I became fascinated with Tang Sang and these old detectives and stuff like that, and Ng Chun Hong, this student of Wong Sun Leung. He was a police officer, perhaps a detective in those days. While I was doing some internet sleuthing, his name came up. He was a student of Wong Sun Leung, but he was also a police detective or a cop. And he knew Tang Sang. In fact, on his website, which I believe was only in Chinese, he mentioned knowing Tang Sang, or he mentioned Tang Sang had recommended he learn from Wong Sun Leung. In any way, there was some, like, he knew Tang Sang from work. Mm. And Tang Sang was somehow maybe the person who told him to learn from Wong Sun Leung or something like that. I don't remember. It's been a number of years. I have the notes somewhere, but let's say something like that, right? So I was like, great. So as I was doing research, because I wanted to write a book about Tang Sang, the problem is that I know I'm probably the world's foremost expert on Tang Sang because I've researched as much about this guy as possible. I have every single newspaper article that mentions him in Hong Kong. Even if it's just a very short blurb about him, I have everything. And I could never find his family. And I need to talk to his family to write a proper biography about him. Otherwise, I don't feel comfortable. So I had researched it for about 2 years. Wow. And at the end of the day, I couldn't finish the project because there was there's a lot of holes, and like I need to know XYZ about where he came from or his childhood or whatever, and it's just not there. And so I know a lot of stuff, but it's like It's like very patchwork. Like so I have hundreds of pages of notes about Tang Sang and his history that I could find. But it's just not enough in there to put it together in a book. So I had to unfortunately abandon the project.
Damn.
But Ng Chung Hong was one of the people that I contacted because I found on his website that he had some mentioning of Tang Sang. So I sent them an email in Chinese. I think at that time I had my wife write it in Chinese. And I asked him if I could interview him about Tang Sang because I wanted to know about these things. And his response, of course, which is very typical Chinese kung fu instructors or Chinese people in general, especially of the older generation, when it comes to talking about sensitive topics, they're normally always going to say no at first. And he doesn't know me to a bump in the wall, right? So, like, is he going to talk?
He knows who you are now.
No, he doesn't. No, I don't even say that. Like, he has no freaking clue who I am, and that's understandable and probably better so that he doesn't know who I am. But, like, you know, some random American is like, hey, tell me about this corrupt cop you used to work with 50 years ago. It's natural that he doesn't want to talk about it. And his email reply was like, I will, you can interview me if you have permission from Tang Sang's family. And that was basically what he said, right? So I really tried to find his family because I'm not trying to do a hit piece on Tang Sang. I'll tell you what, if I was able to write it, I would probably write the most glowing book because I'll tell you what, I am a Tang Sang fanboy.
Yeah.
That dude was smooth. I like it. I probably people would be like, this is some propaganda shit.
Yeah.
This guy was a corrupt detective. No, dude, he was cool. He was super cool.
He was one of the coolest.
He was one of the coolest because everyone who knew him had nothing but cool stuff to say about him. They said how nice he was, how cool he was, how he paid for everything, right? Mm-hmm. I guess I can say it now because it's been many years. When Sifu Leung Ting would come to New York, sometimes he would have like old friends of his that he knew from way back in the day who happened to be in the States. And then like maybe they were in New York. So when he would come to teach a seminar here, some of these old friends that he knew from the 60s would come and visit him. Mm. And one time, I'll never forget, it was just so amazing. It was maybe the second or third seminar that he taught here in New York. He brought, but one of his ex-girlfriends from the 60s.
Mm.
From the early 70s, came to New York. She was in New York because she lives, I believe, somewhere in the Midwest. She knew he was coming. She hadn't seen him forever. So she actually came to New York to, like, say hi to him. So while he's teaching the seminar, she came to the school. And you could tell, like, he was very excited to see her because that was, like, his old flame from back in the day, right? And if I dare say so, she was still looking quite good. And so,
dare say so.
Yeah, he's older at the time.
That's
but
off
she,
the record.
Yeah, but she was still looking very good. Yeah. So I could tell he was very excited to see her. This is maybe 2005 or something like that. So it's already been a minute from now, right? And but the interesting thing was is that she told me because, you know, while he was teaching the seminar, I would have to sometimes do some admin stuff or whatever. So she was sitting there and I was like talking to her and I was like, oh, so you knew him back in those days? And she's like, yeah, you know, I used to be his girlfriend. She goes, she told me she was his girlfriend when he was learning from Yip Man.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, really? So when he was taking private lessons from Yip Man, like this, she was his girlfriend or whatever, right? And so I was like, really? She says, yeah, we used to go to dim sum. It would be, you know, I would come with Leung Ting because it was a boyfriend, and Yip Man would be there, and Tang Sang would be there. And at that point, I only knew Tang Sang from some photos, and then she was actually the first one to tell me about Tang Sang.
Wow.
You know, and she was the reason why I became fascinated with him because we'd sit there and she'd be like, yeah. And then she was like, yeah, we would. It was always like all of us that went to dim sum. It was Sifu Yip Man, Tang Sang, Leung Ting. And then so it was the four of them. Right. Mm-hmm. And then at first I was like, oh, what was Yip Man like? Right. And she told me something really interesting. She said he was very kind when he spoke to you. And she kind of mentioned that it wasn't normal for Chinese men in his generation to be that way. She said when she would talk to Yip Man, because he's, of course, in Chinese culture, he's much higher stature. He's also not just a sifu or whatever, but he's also much older. Like she's in her 20s at this point, and this is an old Yip Man we're talking about. She says whenever she would talk to him, she says the thing she always remembers about Yip Man is that he would he would stop and he would look at you. And she said he would give you his undivided attention when you talked. And she said he had these eyes that were like very dark, and he would look right at you and he would really be paying attention to you. And I'm thinking, maybe he would pay attention to you, because so I don't know if dudes who talk to Yip Man at that time would say the same thing. Right. Yip Man is probably just eating and not looking at them, right? Of course, she was quite attractive. She was still attractive. She was very attractive back then. And she said that Yip Man really would look at her and would give her his undivided attention. And she said he was very warm in that way, and it was very rare of Chinese men of his generation to talk to the younger generation or to talk to women like with that kind of, you know, care and concern, right? Mm-hmm. And then I thought that was really cool, because those are the stories you don't read in books. It's like, oh, Yip Man punched this guy, or Yip Man did this, or Yip Man said this, or whatever.
Yip Man won.
You very rarely hear just like those. I always like those little stories that humanize people. And what's interesting is that's a story you're going to get from someone who's maybe not a Wing Chun student, you know?
Okay.
The girlfriend is going to look at Yip Man very differently than the person who's learning from him, because they have a very different relationship. Mm-hmm. So I always appreciate those takes coming from people who just are looking at him like an old man, for example, right? Because you get a fairer assessment of what that person was like. But then she says, yeah, and we were always there with Tang Sang. She goes, do you know who Tang Sang is? I go, yeah, I've seen him. He's the guy with the big white suit. She goes, yeah, he was a police detective and he was very rich, because in those days, you know, the cops were taking, and that's when she introduced, and then I was like, oh, and she goes, yeah. And she said sometimes when we were having dim sum, because Tang Sang would be getting payoffs from all the different triads, she said they would sometimes be eating there, and Tang Sang would be sitting, and Yip Man would be there, Leung Teng, and then she would be sitting there. And then some lower level triad person would come up to Tang Sang behind him and say, you know, like, oh, you know, Mr. Tang, how's everything going? Like, so-and-so just wants to thank you, you know, for being such a good friend, right? And then Tang Sang would be like, oh, okay. And that person would pass Tang Sang a red envelope with some money, and this was like a payoff. And so, or he would go over there and he would take some money and say, oh, thank you, right? Oh, yeah, tell your boss, I'll see him next week and I'll invite him to dinner. And there's all these kind of pleasantries being exchanged, but this is all code for, I'm paying you my boss's share for whatever you're turning a blind eye to or whatever, right? And she said every time the bill came, Tang Sang was, and he would pay. And she said every time he pulled out just this fat stack of cash.
Wow.
And just, and would pay everything, wouldn't let them pay for anything. And then, so she told me that, and I was like, oh, this person sounds interesting. So it was actually Sifu Leung Teng's ex-girlfriend from that time that kind of planted the seed to make me super fascinated with Tang Sang. And also for people who have the Dynamic Wing Chun book, which is a very early book from Sifu Leung Teng. At the very beginning of the book, he has like what he calls his photo story of like his history. And he shows photos of him when he started teaching, and then like when him starting his career. And then there's some photos from a demonstration he did in 1969, which Yip Man was the guest of honor. Well, there's one photo in the Dynamic Wing Chun book which shows a female performing the Cham Kyu form. So Yip Man is standing, they have like a stage, and then there's like a big long table, and Yip Man is the guest of honor, and Leung Teng is sitting next to him, and you have Tang Sang and Po Kin Hwa and some Kung Fu masters from other styles there. And they're all sitting at this long table, and then there's a lone female performing the Cham Kyu form. That was Siva Leung Teng's ex-girlfriend. That was the one who came here. And then I opened the book, she goes, oh, you see, that's me. And I was like, oh. And then she says, Yip Man asked me personally to demonstrate the Cham Kyu form. And I was like, really? She's like, oh, I was so nervous because he's watching. And of course, her boyfriend at the time is Leung Teng. And like, you know, it's like kind of a big deal. So she was a huge window into telling me these little stories about how Sifu Leung Teng was like back then, how Yip Man was like when they were having dim sum. And then, of course, Tang Sang. And that kind of started the whole thing. And then eventually, I'm still a huge Tang Sang fanboy. But unfortunately, I came into nothing but dead ends. So I think we have time for one last question. Episode's running a little bit longer, but it is the final episode of season one. So we'll give the audience a little more time. Of course, some people are like, oh my God, he's blathering on. End this freaking episode. Talking about fanboying about some old cop.
Of course. Next up, we got Dryzen.
Oh, we were so close.
Man.
So close.
No good deed goes unpunished. So let's give the fans one more question. And it's Dryzen.
Yeah, I know. slip that one in, did you?
Not even. It was just here.
Yeah, of course. Slip whatever.
That one in.
It's just here. It's just randomly. It's right there on the list. It was here. So.
All right, let's go.
All right, so Dryzen is asking, he says first, yo, I'm so proud of you guys getting through the year. 52 episodes is epic. Shout out to all the crew. You're all the dope.
Wow, that's thanks, amazing.
Dryzen. That's what he just said.
Thanks, wow. Dryzen. That's what he just said. You know,
that's what he wrote.
I'm watching. I'm huge into this YouTube channel. I think it's called the Behavior Panel, and it's these body language experts where they'll watch videos like Prince Andrew, like the interview, and then they'll break down like, "Oh, here you see, this is deception or whatever." Right? I've been watching these things religiously since November, and I'm spotting deception here because he points to the screen. Oh, I just saw it here, which is like an overcompensation for the fact that he knows he's lying.
Yeah.
And he has to go like, no, look, it's right here. It's right. Yeah, this is all classic deception 101.
What? This doesn't make sense.
All right,
sense.
Let's go.
All right, so he says, yo, he says all that cool stuff. And then he says, I have a hypothetical, right? You're on the rower. One day, because you love to do your rowing exercises.
I love the rower.
And
I'd like to cut through the chase here. Is he going to row back in time?
I don't know. I'm just reading it.
Hypothetically speaking, do you think
okay.
he will
I'm on the rower.
Hypothetical, he's on a, you're
on
the rower.
Uh-huh.
And you're just getting in your workout. You're trying some new workout from some list you have. And all of a sudden, you feel like you're about to pass out.
Uh-huh.
But you're safe.
Uh-huh. It's pretty
I'm
much me
keep
every,
going.
Pretty much every time you're on the rower.
Yeah,
that's what
I got to keep going. That's I don't right. care about passing out. You keel over. Damn, that's crazy. You keel over. You wake up. You come to. And you're like, what just happened? You get up and you're oddly enough, no one even cares that you just like, no one's around you like, hey, oh, you okay? You get up and you find yourself.
This is so cringe. Oh, this is so peak cringe.
You get up, like you're confused. You're like, what the hell?
Oh, this is a Henry Cejudo cringe.
And then you look over and you're straight on the set of Ip Man 3. You notice it because Mike Tyson is beating up Donnie Yen. But you're looking and you're like, yo, what's the deal? What's going on here? And you look to the side and you see a broken mug on the floor. And Tyson is livid. You know Tyson, he goes into his, and he's just swinging on everybody.
My tongue, man.
He's like swinging on everybody. Donnie Yen falls, but he gets up and he's like, my bad. I didn't mean it. And some dude is just like, yo, we didn't know. Apparently the coffee was too hot. He burned his tongue on a coffee of the Ip Man Mug 3 that you were supposed to get.
The one that's supposed to be in that box.
Yeah. Wow. He smashed the mug and it's there in pieces. What do you do? Do you want that mug? You know it's your mug.
Do I get the mug that's smashed by Mike Tyson on the set of Ip Man 3?
It's he drank from it. The coffee was too hot. It's still there, right there. You're literally right in front of the mug, pieces of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But he's still going off,
got it.
Beating everyone's ass.
All right, so what would I do in
this
that
situation? This was behind the scenes.
What would I do in that scene?
They did film it, but they kept it out
of
the movie.
Got it, okay. All right, I would take the broken mug because then you could sell it like on eBay. Like, this mug
crazy
was smashed.
That joint?
No. You just go, this mug was smashed by Mike
keep
Tyson.
Keep it smashed?
No, you keep it smashed. You tell the story and go, this mug was smashed by Mike Tyson. So collectors would buy that to have the mug smashed by Mike Tyson, of course, all right? But I would just collect it, so I'm like, I can sell this on eBay later so I can get some money.
And yeah, then but I would, and then while you're trying to grab the mug, he comes over to your direction.
Uh-huh.
Fucking you on my mug, man.
I was like, yo, take it easy. Yo, yo. Mug. I would say, hey. Take it easy. All right? I got a plan for this, all right? I'll take the mug.
Yeah.
I'll tell you about it a little bit later. Just calm down.
Oh.
All right? Calm down, Tito. All right? Then I walk over to Donnie.
Oh, no.
And I say, all right.
Oh, no.
This might surprise you a little bit.
Oh, no.
But I come from the future. And he's like, what? Yeah. I go, you're going to do Yip Man 4, by the way. All right? And you're going to be in Rogue One in Star Wars as well. So when those things happen, then you know that I was legitimately from the future. Yeah. All right? And also your wife hogs all of your Instagram postings. But anyway, you probably know that already. So anyway. But I'm going to tell you something from your future you might not know, Donnie Yen. You are going to ask someone for a favor to go meet Lang Lang. Lang Lang, your boy, the piano player.
Yeah.
And it's for promotion for this movie, so it hasn't happened yet. And you're going to say, oh, Lang Lang is in New York. So-and-so, get one of your New York friends to go to where this place where Lang Lang is and then film with a phone saying, hey, have Lang Lang saying like, hey, Donnie, congratulations on Yip Man 3 so that you can post that on your IG. Yeah. And then you're going to say, in return for going and meeting Lang Lang, I will do a quick shout out on my Instagram or send you a video saying like, hey, if you guys are in New York, train at City Wing Chun. You're going to say that shit, Donnie. But here's the thing, Donnie. You're not going to do it. The guy's going to go there and wait for 4 hours in a day where he could be training and doing some Kung Fu Genius shit. I'm not going to tell you who's going, but I'm just going to tell you this. 4 hours he could have been doing Kung Fu Genius shit. He waited there and had to meet Harvey frickin' Weinstein. And you want to know something else about the future? Stay away from Harvey Weinstein. Like right now, okay? You got some photos with him.
Disassociate
yourself. Delete them shits right now, yeah. Okay? But here's the thing. When the guy waits for 4 hours and has to shake Harvey Weinstein's hand and film Lang Lang sweaty. And deal with his annoying Chinese assistant who doesn't really want you to be there, and all you need to do is a 10-second clip saying, hey, this is Donnie from Yip Man. If you're in New York, train at City Wing Chun, just do it. Because if you don't, that guy's going to talk shit about you on his podcast every chance he gets. And as far as the season one of KFG, that's all I got to say about that. All right, everyone. Well, that was the last episode of the first year and first season of Kung Fu Genius. Comment below. What did you like about the first season? What were your favorite parts? Of course, you can ask questions for me to answer on a future episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the Kung Fu Genius. Like this video, share it, and I'll see you guys next time. Word is I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Seagung. And I produce masters. You surpassed us. Your Kung Fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the victor. Let me know what your favorite parts of our first season were, clips or questions. Probably not Dryson, whatever it is, put in the comment below. Of course, put questions for me to answer in a future MMA. Don't forget to subscribe to the Kung Fu Genius, like this video, share it, and I will see you guys next time.
Almost perfect. You said MMA.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
Do it over.
All right, guys. Well, that was the last episode of the first season of Kung Fu Genius. Let me know below what bits did you like in that first season? You know, sketches. Did we even do sketches? We did not do sketches. Let me do this again. All right. It started.
We should have done some sketches.
All right, here we go. So let me know below you. All right. Okay, here we go.
The Genius will be answering all sorts of hot nonsense from YouTube. Lots of gems, lots of...
Is he making you laugh?
The real reason Bruce Lee died.
Season one in the bag. Thank you, gentlemen. Yo, yo, yo. Thank you, gentlemen. Season one, KFG.
Hoo, 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 hoo.